Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big.
Elissa Walker Campbell, we are back this weekend on our show, and it is hard to believe that the NBA playoffs are just around the corner. We've got 2 weeks left in the regular season, and the top seeds for the playoffs in each conference are up for grabs. And I'll say that the teams are tightening the screws. They're looking to get into the best position possible before the playoffs begin on April 16th. A team that has already clinched their playoff berth and they are executing very nicely is the Dallas Mavericks. And we are so thrilled to have back with us their play-by-play, television play-by-play announcer, Mark Folliwell. Mark, thank you so much for coming on. I know you're still out on the big West Coast road trip and getting up early. It is never an easy thing. Thank you.
No problem. Happy to do it and happy to talk about the Mavs, who are obviously on a nice little road trip right now.
Yes, it's a tremendous road trip. We're going to talk about that, but I have to share that, you know, watching and listening to you on the telecast, you're sharing a lot of superlatives these days when you describe your Mavs, because they're continuing to show steady improvement late in the regular season, and all the pieces of the puzzle are coming together.
Well, I think a lot of the reason for the superlatives is just because, hey, this team's having a good road trip right now, and, you know, anytime you win on the road, that's a pretty impressive thing, I think, in the NBA. Their defense has been really good, especially late in games, and a lot of games recently on the road trip, as they've been able to rattle off some wins. And so I think that their play as of late, while still not exactly at the level that Coach Rick Carlisle wants it to be, there are still a few areas that they need to clean up. They've done a lot of good things lately, and you know, it's a team that has high expectations. So, you know, they probably want to be talked about in fashion like that, because they've set the bar high for themselves.
This is a veteran team, and as you said, has very high expectations. Mark, you spend a lot of time around these guys at practice and at the games. Can you give us a sense of how the team is narrowing their focus and they're really dialing it in, because they do want to make a run at an NBA championship?
Well, defense is a primary focus. I mean, that's one of them. You know, another thing is they have some turnover issues that they would like to get better before the playoffs get started. They've had some games recently where, in the words of Rick Carlisle, they've been hitting the non-smoking signs, the no-smoking signs, because they've been throwing the ball away. And they want to play. They want to play a free-flowing offense. They want to play with the right mix of aggression and discretion. He says, you know, they don't want to be robots out there. So it is an area that, you know, it's a tricky little line that you have to walk when you want to play some free-flowing basketball and play a little bit up-tempo from time to time, but also do it in a way where you're still responsible and don't, you know, do silly things with the basketball and turn it over, because especially when the playoffs get started, possessions become so precious because they are limited. It gets harder to score because the defenses and the teams are, of course, better. So that's really an area that they want to focus on going into the playoffs. Being as high of a seed as they possibly can, being as healthy as they can. I do think that there is an eye towards not maxing out anyone's minutes and pushing them into overdrive from a minutes perspective as we head down the stretch here. I think all of those things are top of mind for the team as they prepare for the playoffs, which will start here in 2 weeks.
You talk about defense, but also let's zero in on those turnovers. What has your conversation been with Coach Carlisle? I mean, how do you go about minimizing and eliminating those? You're not going to eliminate turnovers completely, but to at least get them in the single digits. I mean, they had 6 turnovers in the first quarter earlier this week on Wednesday night against the Clippers.
It really gets a lot back to what Rick said, you know, that line I gave, the aggression-discretion line that they're trying to find the right balance of. They had an off-day practice earlier this week in Phoenix where, you know, I spoke to him about it in particular, and I said, okay, well, you say you don't want to be a robot, and you're working on these things with the turnovers, so what exactly you do to work on that? Because, you know, you're trying to keep in mind that you don't want to be too predictable and too just stuck in a rut out there, that robot thing like he was talking about.
And right.
Well, they worked on their spacing some on the fast break. It was about lanes that they're running on the fast break, about their spacing in certain situations. If you'll remember, there was one particular turnover in the Clipper game where Brad Davis, my partner on the road games of the broadcast, pointed out, Dirk threw the ball to Peja. They were bunched together very close on the floor. It was much too close for a pass like that, and it bounced off Peja's shoulder and out of bounds. And so that was a point where the two players were spaced too closely together. Dirk probably should have kept the ball and let, you know, Stojakovic get on farther up the floor and spot up for maybe a three-point opportunity in transition. So that's just one example of the kind of play that we're talking about here where the spacing isn't right. And I think another thing is sometimes make sure to make the simple pass. Sometimes there might be a desire to make a pass that is a little bit more difficult than it needs to be. So trying to make the good, smart, simple basketball play is something also that they want to work on as opposed to, you know, it doesn't always have to be the difficult highlight reel pass or something like that.
Well, Mark, you know, basketball, it's a game of angles. You got to have proper spacing on the floor, whether it's in the half court or in transition. It sounds like Coach Carlisle, here we are late in the regular season, but he's kind of going back to basics and back to fundamentals and teaching those X's and O's, right?
I do think that, look, that's going to win you playoff games. You know, there's still always mistakes that have to be corrected. You know, it was funny that you bring up that point because I remember hearing Greg Popovich talk about this during the playoffs last year when the Spurs had gotten out in front of the Mavs and they were in a playoff series in the first round after a 50-win season. And, you know, he's been through so many of these battles, and someone kind of asked him where he continued to get his drive, how he continued to, you know, find the motivation to work as hard as he did. And he said, because I enjoy the teaching, I enjoy the coaching. And at basketball, he said, is a game of mistakes. There's always something that's going wrong that you have the chance to correct. And so, you know, he enjoys that aspect of coaching and teaching. And I think that Rick's the same way, that, you know, this thing is getting back to fundamentals. It's getting back to teaching those aspects of the game because, as I said in the answer to your first question, the expectation level is very high for this. The bar is set very high. There is a great deal of desire to go, obviously, on a long playoff run and to win at the highest level. And another thing that Rick has said recently is that, you know, at this time of the year, if you're coaching the NBA and you're not pushing your guys to get better in any area, then you're not in it to win it at the highest level. And they want to win at the highest level. And another thing he'd tell you is that you can't be mediocre in any aspect of the game to get to where they want to go. So those are all things that he talks about and reasons behind his motivation to teach things that he's teaching and coach the way he's coaching.
Well, he's doing a terrific job, especially with that fourth quarter defense, because the Mavs are really locking down and they are proving very effective against their opponents.
Well, you know, Jason Kidd, while not on the floor, you know, and long stretches in some of those fourth quarters, I still think he can't be overlooked because especially what he did in the fourth quarters of the games against the Phoenix Suns and the Utah Jazz at the start of the road trip. He just has great anticipation. He knows where to play in passing lanes, when to step in front of someone and try and draw a charge. He's got tremendous strength in his hands and arms, so that allows him to get steals that maybe some other players wouldn't get. But, you know, it's a commitment to being prepared, you know, to having your opponent scouted, knowing tendencies, and knowing that winning time is in the fourth quarter. And it helps that it's a team full of veteran guys that have presence, that have leadership, that have been in a lot of battles and won a lot of close games before. I don't think that, you know, impacts them in a negative way at all, for sure. I mean, all these close games obviously has to have a positive impact because of their experience in winning them. So that's, I think that's at least some of the reason, you know, again, and the carrot being that they know they're going to have to play defense very well, and that's something that Rick Carlisle has preached since the beginning of the season, that this team's got to be on its game defensively. There had to be improvement in that area this year for them to get to where they want to go, and there was that improvement early in the season. There has been some slippage, I think, in the middle of the season, but they're trying to get back to that here at the end of the year, and we've really seen it in some fourth quarters recently, and obviously they'll need to improve upon that even more as we go forward.
You bet. Good news, certainly, in that fourth quarter. They're closing out those battles, but talk to us a little bit about is why does it seem like the Mavs get off to a slow start, whether it's in the first quarter or perhaps even in the third?
That's a great question. I'm not sure I have an answer for that. You know, one reason is that, you know, maybe it seems that way is because that they do tend to play pretty well when they go to their bench because their bench has been so strong. But, you know, as far as the slow starts, you know, maybe some of it is it's a veteran team that knows that games typically are not decided in the first quarter. I mean, this is a team that fell behind by 19 points on the road against Toronto in the first quarter this year and had made up the deficit within 12 minutes of game time. They were even with Toronto by the middle of the second quarter. So I think maybe it's a team that understands that it's a long game, it's a 24-second shot clock. You know, leads that you get in the first quarter can disappear so very, very quickly. So maybe some of it is their own mindset. But I do know that headed towards the playoffs, I mean, I think when you start playing better teams, you can't afford to get into an early hole. And that certainly is an area that they want to improve upon. You know, really to me, the only answer behind it, I think, has got to be mindset. It's got to be, you know, being ready to play and being ready to hit first and play with aggression and force and that sort of thing whenever you get on the floor. And maybe that intensity hasn't been there at the beginning of games because it's a veteran team that's trying to save itself for A, later in games, and B, also realizing that that energy that you expend over the regular season, you know, empties the tank, and you want the gas tank as full as you possibly can be for when the playoffs get started.
You are listening to the familiar voice, the Mavs television play-by-play announcer, Mr. Yes, Sir, Mark Folliwell, along with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. We do want to direct you to our radio website. That's eradiosports.com. And you used a couple adjectives, aggression and force, and one of those bench players that is coming off the bench and playing so well and productive minutes is providing that. I got a new moniker for him. Call him the Sweet Pea, Peja Stojanović. Mark, I cannot get enough of this guy because I tell you what, it is so fun. He is such a pure shooter, but when he gets his feet set, whether it's in the half court or in transition, you know it's money in the bank.
You know, I know about your tremendous basketball career, Alyssa, and I know that anyone can appreciate a great shooting stroke like what Stojanović has.
Oh.
It's just, you know, it's tremendous. And those days of being on the other side of the rivalry whenever Peja was playing with Sacramento are long ago and far away in my book right now. Those are times that are definitely forgotten because he's been a really nice addition to the Mavs at this point. What he does is, you know, besides the fact that we've seen him have these nights where he's knocked down shots and hit critical threes and helped them build a lead or get back into a game, but you just have to guard him and respect him when he's on the floor, and it spaces the floor for everyone else. You know, as you said earlier, basketball is a game of angles and spacing. Another favorite buzzword of Carlisle is someone affecting the geometry of the game. Stojanović does that because you have to guard him, you have to respect him, you can't neglect him on your defensive end of the floor if you're trying to guard him, because even if he's having a bad shooting night, he's still someone that you have to respect his ability to hit a shot at any time. So he's been a nice addition. I do think that managing his minutes will be key going forward because we're talking about somebody who's 33, who's been banged up, who's had knee issues and back issues and neck issues all to deal with over the course of this season and recent seasons in the past as well. So I think that, you know, they're very, very mindful of not trying to put too much of a workload on this guy, but they like him in this role coming off the bench. It's been really successful since he came back from the neck stiffness that caused him to miss six games and gone to a bench role rather than as a starter. And he can give him good minutes of the three, good minutes of the four, you know, in the ballpark of 20 minutes a game, maybe depending on how he's shooting, a little bit more or a little bit less, depending on how hot he is that particular night. But he's been a welcome addition.
He certainly is providing quality minutes, and I love the stat that you and Brad had thrown out the other night. I guess the Mavs are, 15-0 when he plays 15 or more minutes. I mean, that says it all.
You know, I don't know if there's a little bit of coincidence there or not. I don't know how much to draw from it, other than the fact that, you know, when the guy plays, I do think he makes you better. And it gets back to the fact that you have to honor him when he's out on the floor. You have to cover him, and that opens up things for other people on offense. And I don't think there's any doubt that, generally speaking, I mean, you can always hit bumps in the road, but generally speaking, I think the offense performs more efficiently when he's on the floor.
Mark, can you give us your assessment of him on the defensive end? I mean, he's long, he's 6'10", he can certainly take up space.
Yeah, he can do that, and he can, you know, play passing lanes and has the IQ to read things. Does he get beat off the dribble because of a lack of foot speed and lateral quickness? Sure, it happens. Absolutely it does. And the guy is never going to be someone who's going to garner all defensive team votes. But they're trying to work with him and trying to work with him on, you know, playing guys a certain way depending on their tendencies and their strengths and playing angles and giving, you know, make sure that you know when to crowd a guy, when to give the guy some space based on what they can or can't do really well. But it's a work in progress, but the good thing is he is a smart player who's been in a lot of big games, who isn't going to be overwhelmed by the atmosphere. And so anything that happens in terms of a problem on the defensive end of the floor is going to be just because the other guy has got the skill and has got, you know, the ability to beat him off the dribble or something like that. It's not because he's going to go out there and not be where he should be and make a mistake. So at least the IQ thing is working in his favor, and hopefully he'll be a guy that can help him when he's out there. And the link does help in his own, especially. If you're gonna have somebody out there who has some deficiencies on the defensive end, at least let it be a 6'10 guy that makes it harder to shoot over him.
Well, let's talk about another guy that's coming off the bench that's providing quality minutes. A lot of positive things continue to happen, and that, of course, is J.J. Barea. I mean, the guy may only be 6 feet tall, but he's playing bigger than that.
The great thing about J.J. is, look, he's fearless. You know, he has a great ability to break down the defense off the dribble. He's willing to go inside. He's willing to look for a shot. You know, Bob Ortegal, my former partner on the TV broadcast, he and I saw that guy at the Global Games back in 2003, 2004, that time frame, when he was playing at an under-21 tournament at SMU in Dallas for the Puerto Rican Junior National Team. And you could see it then that team fed off his energy and his toughness and his competitiveness. And I think when he's on the floor, he brings all of those things. He's a great guy to have as a teammate. because I think you know that night in, night out, he's always going to bring his best level of effort and energy. Does that mean that he's going to have a great game every night? Well, no, it doesn't mean that. But he's always someone that you can count on in terms of the guy's going to be ready to play, and he's going to go out and play hard. And the great thing about J.J. this year is that his scoring has improved. He is, you know, shooting free throws more at a higher rate than at any point in his career. He's really recovered from a terrible first 2 months of the year, three-point shooting-wise. I mean, it was just disastrously bad for him. But he's a guy that's shooting in the high 40s percentage-wise on three-pointers since December the 20th. So he's recovered from that aspect of things, and he's learning the point guard position. He's learning how to run a team when he's on the floor. He's got quickness. He's got good handles, and he's got a competitiveness that allows him to compensate for his deficiencies. And all guys that are 6 feet or less are going to have to play like that if you're going to survive in this league. You've got to learn some tricks of the trade and play with a very, very high level of competitiveness. And J.J. does that. You've seen him learn how to sell some calls and has perfected the art of drawing some offensive fouls. So that's been a weapon that he's had defensively that helps compensate for his lack of size.
J.J. Brea is certainly getting to the free throw line more. That's because of his ability to exploit the defense, Mark, and his ability to penetrate. And I'm just curious, though, why is he consistently playing so well against the Clippers?
Well, there's, I'm not sure that there's an answer behind it other than, you know, there are some times that you get some confidence against a team and you had some success against them, and then you always feel good whenever you see them. The Clippers are a team that is not exactly wowing teams defensively this year, especially on the perimeter when they had, Baron Davis earlier in the year for sure. But Mo Williams is a guy who's, pretty good on offense, but not exactly a great stopper out front defensively, nor is Eric Bledsoe at the point guard spot. So they haven't had anybody that's been a lockdown defender over the course of the last 2 years. That plays out front. That's going to be a guy that's going to slow down J.J. They haven't had big guards that have been really good defensively that have been able to overwhelm him. So that's probably some of it. But like I said, J.J.'s had some success earlier in his career against the Clippers, and I do think that sort of thing tends to feed off itself once you've had some confidence in a particular arena or against a particular team. There is something to bringing out the best in you when you see those guys again and again.
Well, when J.J. delivered that big three at about 2:49 in the fourth quarter, I thought that was pretty sweet. I have to ask you, what was your impression, or what are your impressions of Blake Griffin? I mean, he has just taken the NBA by storm. And, of course, I remember his old playing days at the Lloyd Noble Center in Norman, Oklahoma. And being a Sooner, we just love and appreciate his game. But he is just an unbelievable talent.
I knew when you asked me that question, I know about your Sooner background, so I am certainly required to say good things about him in this radio interview, I understand that, but hey, look, what's not to like about the guy? I mean, he, by all accounts, is a great kid, a hard worker. I mean, to come back from the injury that he had last year and play as well as he has this year, I think is a testament to his work ethic, number one, but he has an unlimited future, it looks to me like, because he has a decent jump shot. He's got to work on his free throw shooting because he's going to get to the line so much because of how much he plays inside and around the rim. I mean, he's averaging over 8 free throw attempts a game this year. So he'll need to, shoot better than 64%. But certainly he looks like a guy who's willing to do the work. I mean, his play is just so spectacular in terms of his dunking ability and his ability to run the floor and finish and get on the highlight reel. And, he's got post moves. It's not just a guy who can go up and fetch an alley-oop and dunk it. I mean, there's more to it than that. He does have post moves, and we saw him make a couple of spin moves that were just absolutely fabulous that ended up as baskets in a game earlier this week against between the Mavs and the Clippers. So, he's got the total package talent-wise, and probably has some areas that he'll need to improve defensively, but I think you can probably point to a lot of young players like that at any time. So he's something else, and looking forward to seeing him for many, many years to come, and for the sake of the Clippers, obviously they're hoping it's in their uniform for many years to come and get that franchise on the right track.
Very well said. Mark Folliwell has been along with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. We are getting ready to wrap it up, and it's hard to believe we've talked about so many of the bench players for the Mavs, but also let's talk about one of the veterans who has really solidified that starting position, and that, of course, is Sean Marion. And what is just remarkable about him is his versatility, but also just how the Mavs, I mean, they've asked a lot of him to do a number of different things, and he doesn't seem to complain. He just fits right into that slot, and he produces numbers.
I thought the last point you made really was a great point about Marion, and guys on the team will tell you the same thing, and that includes Rick Carlisle, that they've asked him to do some things here in 2 years that have been a little bit out of his comfort zone and things that he was not nearly as used to doing. He hasn't been a spot-up guy, and he has not shot threes, obviously, well at all. I mean, he's been down in the teens three-point shooting percentage-wise in his time in Dallas, whereas this is a guy who used to shoot in the low to mid-30s as a three-point guy when he was back in Phoenix in the run-and-gun days of the Suns when Nash and the Suns and Marion and Stoudemire were there, and they were really, really performing at a high level. But what he's done is, look, he's a guy who can run the floor with Jason Kidd. He can get baskets that way. He's perfected the art of some of those odd-angle hook shots and runners and floaters that seem to go in, and a lot of those shots are attempted from fairly close range, so that gives you an opportunity to get points in the paint. His defense is fantastic. You know, he's always someone who can accept the challenge of trying to guard the other team's best offensive wing player, and more often than not, you know, he certainly is capable of meeting that challenge and keeping a guy from going off and having a big night. So, you know, he's got a great personality. He's been a really, really nice add to the thing. You know, plays with a lot of fire, plays with a lot of competitiveness, and have really, really appreciated what he's brought to the table here in 2 years.
Well, Mark, we certainly appreciate you coming on and joining us this weekend and enlightening us on the Mavs. Continued success, and we look forward to having you back. I have to share that on the telecast the other night, you looked a shade tanner. What have you been doing, playing golf, or what's going on, Mr. Folliwell?
Well, you know, it's been nice to be on the West Coast. the weather has been a lot better on the West Coast this week than it was back in Dallas and Fort Worth, from what I understand. So, I've taken advantage of the fact that the weather's been a little bit nicer and just spent some more time outdoors, so it's been good.
All I got to say is you've got the best seat in the house right where you're at.
Thanks, I appreciate it. It's been a great run, for sure.
You bet. Thanks, Mark. We'll catch up with you again real soon.
You